did we determine whether there's anyone waiting over in the Portland building to testify? Okay, I'm going to leave that item aside, and we're going to go ahead and we can take action on it at the end of the day today. Let's move on then to our time certain item 11:50.
Sorry, 11:50. Recognize that irregular, unpredictable work schedules negatively affect businesses, employees, and the families of employees, and encourage employers to review their worker scheduling practices and consider changes that ensure workers have predictability and the chance to work the hours necessary to earn a full, livable paycheck.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, in Portland and in Oregon, we've set an example when it comes to progressive, worker-friendly labor policies. Portland led with paid sick leave and paid family leave policies, putting pressure on the legislature to prioritize similar policies at the state level. Oregon passed a much-needed increase in the minimum wage. Labor advocates and community groups are proud of their efforts in these recent victories. The momentum and urgency built around efforts led by community advocates have successfully improved the lives of many workers across the state. So thank you to groups like the Working Families Party, UFCW, and the Fair Shot Coalition for bringing these issues front and center. I first started reading about the terrible impact of unpredictable scheduling for retail and food service employees a couple of years ago. The practice of scheduling people for random shifts without any input from the worker makes it impossible for people to organize their lives or to have any flexibility to arrange for childcare or commit to college classes. That is not what a fair work week looks like. I'm also convinced that as we increase the minimum wage, we must also ensure workers have access to a full paycheck. To be really clear, what I'm interested in, ultimately, is some common sense predictability so workers don't get a schedule on Saturday for a week that begins the next day. I'm not talking about forcing employers to give employees set schedules that are exact same from week to week and month to month, or about capping the number of part-time employees. The Oregon legislature has preempted all cities, including Portland, from adopting any laws related to employee scheduling until July of 2017. The legislature adopted this preemption in 2015. The legislators indicated they didn't want cities to adopt policy in this area until they had a chance to convene a work group and consider a statewide bill during the 2017 session. The preemption will sunset in July 2017 when the legislature adjourns. In the meantime, I wanted to partner with UFCW and the Working Families Party to look at how Portlanders are affected by unfair scheduling practices. Earlier this year, we hosted a roundtable discussion and heard some powerful stories, one of which you will all get to hear in a bit from a worker who participated, Jeff Doolittle. As I continue to hear about the impact unpredictable scheduling has on Portland workers, I wanted to bring this resolution to Council today with three goals. First, to highlight the real impact unpredictable scheduling has on some of our lowest paid workers. Second, to lift up and thank local businesses that are already using predictable and fair scheduling practices. We're lucky to have many great local businesses here in Portland that have incorporated predictability into how they set schedules for employees. We'll hear later from New Seasons, which has built scheduling predictability into the core of their business model. And my staff has met with other local business owners about this topic, many of whom told us how they use best practices to, for example, try to ensure that employees know which days they're going to work a week or two in advance, and make sure that no single employee bears the burden of recovering when an employee calls in sick. Third, I wanted to encourage all employers in Portland to consider their employee scheduling practices and make changes as appropriate to improve predictability for their employees. Fair Workweek policies considered by jurisdictions nationally have focused on retail and food services, which research shows are among the most likely sectors to have radical unpredictability for employees. Often, these employees are the same people who are low paid, earning at or just above the minimum wage. But this resolution calls on all employers to look at our practices to consider what we can do better. Work-life balance is a real struggle for many of us, no matter what our job is. As to Portland itself as an employer, I think that as a whole in our collective bargaining agreements, we strive to give employees advance notice of schedules and compensate employees when there isn't predictability. But I'm sure there is room for improvement, and I look forward to hearing from workers on this topic. Today's resolution is non-binding, but I hope employers do take it seriously to consider how they can use scheduling that works for their employees. In closing, before I hand this off to invited speakers, I want to say a few words about the need for a collaborative process if we do get to the point of considering a regulatory ordinance here in Portland. As many of you know, Seattle just last month adopted a binding ordinance that will go into effect next year. I've read about the Seattle ordinance, and my staff has talked with staff in Seattle about their process. While the vote was unanimous in the city council, the community discussion wasn't without controversy. My staff and I have heard some of the same concerns from local business owners here. I understand these concerns, and that's why it's so important to have all stakeholders at the table, and why I'm so glad New Seasons has joined us today. If the legislature doesn't act next year on this topic, I will be interested in asking council to consider an ordinance, and I'm committed to a strong process that involves all stakeholders in developing a policy targeted to address the problem and with consideration of business practices. With that, I would like to ask the first panel of invited guests to come forward, Dr. Mary King from PSU, Carly Edwards from the Working Families Party, and Jeff one worker that I believe is also with them.
Come on up, please. And if you need another chair, we can just slide up a fourth chair to accommodate everybody.
Steve, while they're getting settled, can I ask a question of the sponsor?
Yes.
You said that the legislature has preempted the right of cities like Portland to weigh in on this. How is that preemption structured?
I think it was pretty sweeping. It was something they passed in 2015. It was actually part of an internal wheeling and dealing to get paid sick leave passed at the state level. And they passed something, the language is basically, local governments are prohibited from taking any action to discuss to address employer scheduling practices.
Thank you. Welcome.
For the worker, Jessica Ricky, who was invited, I have her testimony to read. She unfortunately had to leave.
Sorry about that. Welcome. Who'd like to start?
I could. I have a PowerPoint. I don't know if we
okay.
have.
I need to get Carla
Katie's
to
got
help,
it.
Help with that.
And
so why don't you go ahead and read the worker's statement while Carla's setting up the PowerPoint, if you don't mind.
This is Jessica Ricky's statement. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to tell my story. My name is Jessica Ricky, and I work for Coast to Coast Events. I am a 33-year-old mother of three and a parental figure for two teenage sisters. My kids and I are currently trying to rebuild our lives after living in a domestic violence situation. That domestic abuse situation lies at the heart of my story regarding scheduling. You see, many victims of domestic violence never leave the situation. They stay and endure the slowly escalating fits of rage, outburst, and onslaughts of pain and bruises and blood until some unfortunately pay with their lives. There are psychological reasons why people stay, but many don't leave because they have nowhere else to go. This was exactly the case with me, but for my own life and the safety of my kids, I left all the same. Because I had to leave the home to escape him, I was immediately homeless and had no means of providing for us. The best solution available to me for the first problem was to seek out space in a shelter. It's far from ideal to raise kids in a place like that, and the Columbian newspaper actually published an article with my family as the central example about the difficulties of simply getting them to school and managing homework when you have no home. The second problem I faced was fixed by finding work. I went to work for Coast to Coast Event Services, a contractor with the city, in September 2012, and was elated to have found work. I believed that I could pull myself up from my troubles and build my own model of the American dream. If I worked hard, Coast to Coast was going to be my toolbox. I realized in only my first few days working that I might be wrong thinking. First among the issues I faced was that I had to use public transit to get to and from the event sites that I was scheduled for. Sometimes the Rose Gardner Convention Center, sometimes Clark County Fairgrounds, or the Gorge Amphitheater, and often a Moda Center, where the offices are located. How do I get my kids to school when I need to catch a bus at 5 a.m.? How do I feed them or help with homework when they scheduled me for an event that officially ended at 9 p.m.? Although 9 was the official close, we had to wrap up, close down, and at times babysit touring singers while they frittered the night away and my kids missed the night with their mother. Kelly Clarkson has a thing for midnight croquet, and can't understand why it's not the safest for her to buy her own Starbucks, in case you ever wondered. The schedule never reflected these late-night adventures, and so we obviously couldn't plan for them, but we were still required to work through to the end of them. The managers were normally long gone by that time. How was I expected to get home when I relied on public transit, but my shift actually ended at 3 a.m.? And this wasn't the worst of it. One of the rules of shelter living is that children can't stay there without a guardian. That meant that any event I was scheduled for ran the risk of going past check-in time, and I had to get a hotel night. I often didn't make enough in a shift to cover that hotel stay. That means I would sometimes go to work only so I could keep my job and fix the broken life I was stuck in. I worked for them a little over 6 months and just wasn't scheduled for events anymore after the third time I called in because I couldn't afford the hotel that day. That half year was one of the worst of my life. After 3 months at that job, I suffered from Bell's palsy, a sort of stress-induced stroke that left half of my face immobile for a period. At that time, I was more stressed about the job than my ex-partner tracking me down or living in a shelter or the obvious trauma my kids needed help in recovering from. All of these problems were avoidable if only they'd had adequate number of staff and scheduled people for the event they could actually work, rather than the event some manager decided on with no thought to their family situation. Instead, the schedules for the event appeared whenever. In the end, the job was supposed to be the thing that lifted me out of my troubles. In reality, it was the largest source of my trouble during that period.
Wow, thank you very much. So, I think we're ready to move to your presentation with the PowerPoint. So.
Great.
Carla will activate that for us.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm Mary King. I very much appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I'm very thankful that you're taking up this important topic. I'm a professor of economics emerita at Portland State University and a labor economist. I'll be presenting the highlights of a report, which is the impact on Oregonians of the rise of irregular scheduling. I'll quickly provide you the highlights. You've got a link, and I just passed out a hard copy. It reflects the work of a lot of people, as well as myself, and is the first part of a larger project with University of Oregon colleagues, which is due out in January. I expect that by now you're familiar with the worst aspects of irregular scheduling. What we're learning from national research is that many more people than ever are facing very short notice of work schedules, frequent changes in their work schedules, extremely variable shifts and numbers of total hours scheduled, no guarantee of a minimum number of hours, on-call scheduling, requiring people to be available to work on days that they may not work and certainly then would not be paid or asked to work at the last minute, being sent home early from a scheduled shift, being scheduled for shifts that allow very little time for rest, such as a closing shift in the evening followed by an early morning shift the next day, and a requirement of open availability for work at any time. There are clearly very large negative impacts on workers and families who are scheduled in this way. Uncertainty over how much they'll be paid, difficulty arranging stable child care, elder care, or sick care. It's very hard for them to attend school or pursue any kind of training. Health effects, stress, lack of sleep, very challenging to obtain a second job. It's hard on family life, friendships in the community, and people discuss an inability to plan medical care and even basic family gatherings. It's a significant policy concern. It's affecting a growing segment of the labor force. It's derailing education, training, and career development for young people. It's particularly harmful, of course, for people with responsibility for the care of others and for those care recipients. And it's prevalent in the very occupations projected to add the most jobs to the Oregon economy over the next 8 years, retail, food service, hospitality, and some other service positions. These are the top five occupations in terms of numbers we are projected to be added. Now, we lack data for what's going on in Oregon, and it was in response to that that I and my colleagues started this project. The big national surveys, the kind of things like the census, don't have the questions that would reveal these scheduling issues because they were written with the assumption of standard schedules. They're not even there. The second level of national surveys that have a question that can address it are too small for a decent Oregon sample to be pulled out as a state. So our research project is to fill that gap, and my own part of this project is an analysis of two sets of data. The first is the Working Families Party's Fair Work Week survey. This is a very well done survey, it's a lot done in Portland, but there are people surveyed who come from towns all over the state. K Canvassers engaged people for 1 hour face-to-face interviews, gaining their confidence. I was really quite amazed at the things that people shared, especially as I know a lot of these interviews were happening on the bus. 750 interviews provide substantial documentation that all the issues that are emerging nationally are very present here. I won't go through all the kinds of numbers with you. You've got them. But these are the exactly what you would imagine, and then a level of lack of ability to plan and see other family members that was really, I found very moving, having to read those answers. The second bit of data that I looked at was to look at the American Community Survey data. That's census data, annual data, wanting to get a representative portrait of Oregonians who are in the occupations that are most affected. Compared with the labor force as a whole, they're a bit younger. So they are right in this moment of time trying to go to school, many of them, in higher proportions than the labor force as a whole, and to build a career and a stable earnings trajectory. Despite the fact that on average they're a little bit younger, they have as many kids at home as the labor force as a whole. So they have significant care responsibilities. As well as broad occupations, I looked at some narrow occupations that are particularly affected, cashiers, fast food, maids, and housekeeping. And what those occupations reveal is what a poverty trap irregular scheduling is. People are working for very low wages. They're primarily at the minimum wage, but they're part-time and few hours, so low annual earnings, relatively high SNAP receipt levels, relatively low health insurance coverage, and no way to get out through either a second job or pursuing schooling. So people are raising their kids in poverty, which I don't know if you're aware is the most significant prediction of being in poverty as an adult, is spending time in poverty as a child. And it's based on what are your educational outcomes from stability in housing, childcare, and this kind of thing. So that's the research. I'm happy to answer any questions at any time if you have any, and I urge you to pass this resolution for the good of our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay. Did you have some more that you wanted to present as well?
I have testimony. I think I can't tell with the system of people in the other room. I have some testimony if they aren't able to make it over here that I can hand off to folks.
Some of them are coming over, so...
Can I find out if Monique is here? She's the invited testimony. Oh, Monique's here. Oh, okay, great. I have your paper. I'll let her tell her story for herself. That's my biggest concern. And you may or may not know that today we had about 50 people who were able to come, and some of them are still next door. Some of them have had to leave, but there's much support for this issue, and many people did come to try and join us today, and I'm sure would have liked for you to be able to see them. Thank you all for your time to come and speak to you about scheduling issues in our community, and in particular, thanks to Commissioner Novick for his leadership starting this very important community conversation for looking into solutions. I'd like to take this opportunity to share some background of the Oregon Working Families Party and our work. We're working people, school parents, small business owners, family farmers, representatives of community groups, and labor unions who are determined to get our government focused again on the things that can make our jobs better, our families more secure, and our communities more prosperous. We recently worked in collaboration with other organizations and groups to advocate for an increase in Oregon's minimum wage and for paid sick leave for workers, which this city council helped pave that way. While these efforts might seem piecemeal, they're part of a strategy around workers' rights, and scheduling practices are an essential piece. For example, the recent victory on an increased minimum wage won't mean much without a predictable schedule to rely on for that wage increase. We're at the next and most essential phase of these organizing efforts because scheduling practices are an essential part of any job. In addition to extensive field surveys, we've also had several small worker meetings at our office to understand workers' issues more carefully and to begin to consider potential policy solutions. These workers come from a variety of industries, and as Dr. King points out, many of the worst practices we see are in food service and retail. Most importantly, we have been developing a broad-based coalition of organizations, including labor unions that represent city workers, such as at BOIC and Parks and Rec, to support our cause. Our coalition includes UFCW Local 555, the Oregon AFL-CIO, Family Forward Oregon, Oregon Education Association, SEIU, Oregon AFSCME, Opano, Pocoon, Oregon Nurses Association, Unite Here Local 8, the Oregon Trials Lawyers Association, Main Street Alliance, and the Laborers. Many of our partners were here with us today. And although we've had limited responses, we have also outreached to our local neighborhood coalitions and look forward to more conversations with them. Additionally, we've been coordinating with the Center for Popular Democracy, which leads the National Fair Work Week Initiative, and who have worked with local efforts in both Seattle and San Francisco. When talking about the impacts of unpredictable scheduling and the effects of working without enough hours or too many hours, it's imperative that our discussion first and foremost be based in a racial and gendered analysis. We know empirically that those with the power to make schedules are overwhelmingly white and male, and that those who experience the impacts of erratic scheduling are disproportionately women, people of color, and parents. This information can be found in the data brief on Retail Jobs Today, produced by the Center for Popular Democracy in January 2016, and is available on their website. We also know that erratic scheduling does work for some workers, usually younger and whiter, but we can't ignore this issue because the system works for a few. This is why the Oregon Working Families Party is working in Salem to create common sense policy solutions to alleviate some of the burden placed on women and people of color, and are urging the city to engage in this conversation and to take action in every way possible, including passing this resolution. One thing that the city can take action on right now is their relationship with city contractors, and I encourage you all to consider that as you hear the stories from current employees of city contractors, including Coast to Coast Events and Janus Youth. Their stories are compelling, and while the state has preempted regulation on this issue as a whole, looking at your own practices as an employer and looking at the practices of companies you contract with could provide some relief for workers now. In closing, I would say, the heart of this issue is ultimately about power, the power to control someone else's life, when they wake up, when they go to sleep, when and how long they may see their children for is all based on their schedule. Employers might tell you, if they don't like it, they can get another job. But if this issue is about the power dynamic experienced by whole industries in the economy, we can't put the solution to a systemic problem on individuals. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Just a comment, and I was really glad that you mentioned BOIC, the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and Parks, because I think certainly in Parks, I'm taking responsibility to look at how are our seasonal workers scheduled, how much advance notice they get. And in BOIC, we've got the AFSCME contract, which in some cases is makes it difficult to get sensible scheduling, and certainly it with mandatory overtime. And so I think it's not just a big corporation evil boss. It's our own workers, and indeed it's our city union partners too, that we all need to recognize that this kind of scheduling is bad for everybody and for the customers and for the people who are working. So I'm assuming that's something you're going to be doing, Commissioner, looking into BOIC?
Well, we are having those discussions at BOIC.
Good.
Well, since we had a kind of contentious discussion this morning, I hope that you are talking with Anna Kenrit from Human Resources to make sure that we do make progress on that issue when we get to an agreement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both. Thanks. And I understand some of our invited speakers are here as well, so come on up.
Yes, Mayor, I'd like to invite Sarah Jonitas, Tia Rayner, and Monique Monroe.
Welcome. Come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Who'd ever like to start? Go ahead.
Shelley? Okay. Hi, everybody. Good afternoon, Mary Hales, Commissioner Novick, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish. For the record, my name is Sarah Jonitas, and I'm the Director of Social Responsibility for New Seasons Market. Thank you for inviting me here today to participate in this important conversation about providing predictability and fairness in worker schedules. At New Seasons Market, we know that our staff who work for us are our greatest asset. The amazing people that stock our shelves, that run our registers, that bake delicious pies and pastries, they are at the heart of our competitive advantage. They're the reason our customers shop with us and remain loyal to us year after year. We deeply value our staff and their countless contributions to our business, and we've always believed that they deserve to have predictable, regular schedules so that they can care for their families, spend time with loved ones, take care of business at home, and rest and recover for their next day at work. Our lifestyle scheduling policy reflects these values. We prioritize advanced scheduling, predictable and regular schedules, and the right to rest between shifts. Staff members are scheduled to work no more than 5 days in a row, with at least 2 days off in a row, and at least 12 hours of rest between shifts. In addition, all shifts are minimally 4 hours long. Although schedules sometimes do fluctuate due to business needs or staff needs, we make every effort to maintain consistent schedules that balance each individual's employee's needs with the needs of our business. Providing our employees with predictable schedules is the right thing to do, not only for their well-being, but also for our business. Thanks to our lifestyle scheduling policy and other policies aimed at supporting our staff, our retention at New Seasons Market is very high and turnover is very low. I'm proud to say that 25% of the staff members we have with us now have been with us for over 6 years. And our rolling 12-month turnover at New Seasons is 29%, and that compares to 56% nationwide for retailers. Lower turnover and higher retention means lower costs to recruit and train employees, and it's also an indicator of their engagement at work. We're happy to see the city taking up the issue of fair scheduling with this resolution, and we thank Commissioner Novick for his leadership on this. We're supportive of efforts to provide advanced scheduling, predictability, and the right to rest for more workers in Portland, and we look forward to being part of any future conversations about specific policy recommendations regarding fair scheduling. Thank you again for your leadership on this critical issue.
Steve, can I ask a question?
Please.
So thank you for being here, and at some point I'd like you to explain to me why the bagel and lox at New Seasons is so great.
We'll take that one offline.
Why it's so great. But here's my question. You've made a powerful case, and you've highlighted that you have better retention, lower turnover, which means a more stable workforce, which I hope means a workforce that feels good about their work, and you've said it results in lower costs to you.
Mm-hmm.
So flip that around for us for a second and give us a sense. You're competing for talent.
Yes.
In a marketplace, in a very competitive marketplace. One thing I've noticed about the city is wherever you go now, once you find the New Seasons, within about half a mile, you're likely to find three or four of your competitors kind of clustered.
Mm-hmm.
So you're competing for talent. What advantage does it give you as an employer that you have these policies in place, and how do you measure that?
When you're
competing for talent.
Sure. Thank you for your question. I think a good indicator of that for us recently was when we opened our newest store, which is in the University Park neighborhood over near St. John's, and we held a job fair for that. We hire about 150 to 200 staff members every time we open a store. And in that particular case, when we held the job fair, we had over 1,000 people show up. We've seen those numbers increasing over time as we've continued to add to our progressive workplace benefits and compensation. We see this as part of our benefits. It's part of the culture that we create at New Seasons in trying to take care of our staff. And we think that it's very clear that we're able to attract and retain talent differently when we take really good care of our people. So I think it's simple as that. Does that answer your question?
It makes sense, doesn't it? It's
best,
good.
Yeah.
It's good for the employer and good for the employee. When you hit that sweet spot, there's a certain sense to it. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me, Mayor Hills and Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Novak, for reaching out to workers like myself. My name is Tia Rayner. I used to work for a coffee shop at the airport, but I had to quit. I could no longer afford to work there. Like many service industry workers, it takes two jobs in order to stay afloat, not prosper and do amazing things, but just to stay afloat, to stay off of the social services radar. When I was hired at the coffee shop, they promised me a set schedule, and I knew what days I was going to have off, which meshed perfectly with my other job, which is an on-call banquet server at a hotel. And I was super excited because this is exactly the job I needed. And once I got through training, I was handed a completely different schedule that didn't even reflect what I had been told I would be working, which meant that I was not able to schedule enough shifts with my other employer to be able to actually make it. Over the next seven months, my set schedule was changed 8 times. One time I was asked, do you want to maintain this schedule with these off days, or do you want to go to this schedule with these off days? And I said, I wanted to stay. And they're like, too bad, you're now on this schedule. That's the type of power the employer has, and you don't have many options. And what kept me in this job, part of it, was I had been a victim of domestic violence, and my head went through a window as a result of that violence. And so I was now trying to maintain an $800 a month apartment on my income alone instead of two. The way it affected was sometimes I got extended. Like, they wouldn't even tell me. They just wouldn't pull my till. And it's like, I'm stuck there. I'm held prisoner because they won't pull my till. And I can't walk out without pulling my till if I want to keep my job. But at the same time, I don't have time to get to my other job anymore. And it went on like this. And the problem is I know that fair scheduling can work. Back in the early 2000s, I worked for Arby's. Arby's has to know exactly what they need because it takes 48 hours to defrost one of those roasts. It takes 4 hours to cook that roast. And if you run out of roast beef in your Arby's, wow. You know, and if they can do that months in advance, know how much beef they need, they can do it for the workers. Any place can. And the amazing thing is I no longer work at the airport, but I work for another company here in Portland. It is another an on-call server position for a local company that does on-site catering. And I actually know most of my shifts 1 to 2 months in advance. As soon as the event is booked, they're filling it with people, and you know that, hey, I have work this day. I don't have to worry. And if they're able to do that, why can't other employers, especially when on-call, well, just banquet work period is so volatile. Like, if they can manage it, why can't somebody who knows, hey, we need people every day at this exact time for this shift, you know, in a storefront. It doesn't fluctuate that bad day to day. They can figure it out.
Wow, thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here to share my story. My name is Monique Monroe, and I work for Janus Youth, a city-contracted program as a relief coordinator for runaway and homeless youth and commercially sexually exploited children. I have been in the position of relief coordinator for over a year, and I average over 50 hours a week and on dozens of occasions up to 60 to 70 hours a week. I receive my schedule via email, text, or call, and my hours change daily as I am on call 5 days a week, 24 hours a day. Even on my set days off, I am shamed into coming to work. If I do not come in, I run the risk of putting my coworkers in the position of being exploited. For example, my coworker on one occasion had to work almost a full 24-hour shift because I was not able to come in. This happens often, and this happened to me. We are regularly guilted into coming in for the sake of the youth. I was once advised that if I refused to come in at 2 a.m., youth could run the risk of not being properly served at the crisis office due to a supervisor's declaration that they are too inexperienced to do the work. This line is repeated to us often. There was one occasion where I had no choice but to decline to work when I was called in at 1 a.m. This was less than 6 hours after I clocked out of a 21-hour shift. I was then yelled at and asked what my purpose was. On another occasion, when I failed to answer my phone between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. while I was sleeping, before a 9-hour shift coming up at 7 a.m. that same day, I was later openly accused of being on drugs for not picking up the phone. As a relief coordinator, one of two spread between six programs, we are considered on-call. We do not have set schedules. We are expected to work when people are on vacation, call out sick, or quit. We have no written guidelines as to when we get to sleep, make appointments, or live our lives outside of 2 days off a week, and those 2 days are never consistent. They may start the evening before or the day of, and end the evening of or the day after, depending on program needs.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Learning a lot. Excellent. Questions for these three women? Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And thanks for waiting until we could get started this afternoon.
Great. We're used to it.
Yes.
I suppose
we can cut the irony with a knife.
All right. Steve, do you have some other folks that you had signed?
No, Mayor, I think that's the end of our invited testimony.
Okay, there are others who want to speak on this item?
Katie, am I wrong?
I've got a list. You want to go to the list?
Okay.
I show Kurt Huffman, Greg Astley, and Valerie Stinson.
Okay. Are you still here?
They're still here.
It's like some are, yes. Okay, please, come on up. Yeah, come join
and if,
those folks.
Paul Rayner was going to speak also.
Okay, Hank, stand by, folks. We'll get you up in a minute. We'll take these two first. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name's Donna Zeeb, and I work for Fred Meyers at Beaverton. And I know that my story isn't so severe as theirs, but it's still one to hear. I work in the nutrition department, and I'm here today about my scheduling concerns. My manager has been off for 3 months, and they're not hiring anybody, getting anybody to help us. There's only two of us that are working. And our hours are increased and erratic, and we need hours that are more scheduled and complex to each other. As a breast cancer survivor, when I got this job with Fred Meyers, I was told that for health reasons, I needed a schedule that would work and wouldn't be all over the board. Sometimes I only get 5 hours of sleep between shifts. As for example, on Friday I work at, from 2 days from now, I work at 11 o'clock at night, and then I have to be back at 5 o'clock in the morning the next day. That means I only have 4 hours of sleep. It's not safe and it's not healthy for my body. And for being a breast cancer survivor, I think that's just going to make my body and just going to set my everything off. I'm going to get sick. And I went to HR and I went to the managers and asked them if they could get me a set schedule. And they said that I have to deal what they have to deal with. And my manager's sick and hasn't been able to come back to work for a while. So I'm doing manager's job and not getting paid for a manager's position. So I feel that I think that, you know, they should change things. And I would like to have a set schedule. And also, they were giving me 2 days split shifts off. Like I would have I would work 1 day and then work 3 days and then have another day off. Your body can't rest and it's very, you know, unhealthy. And, you know, we're lifting big, heavy things. And it's easy to, you know, get yourself off balance when you don't have enough rest. So, you know, I'm here today for me and my coworkers. If they would just have a set schedule, if I'm here to 5 o'clock and get here at 5 o'clock in the morning all week and have 2 days off. So that's what I'm here for, and thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you being here. Afternoon.
Good morning. Afternoon. Jeff Anderson, Secretary Treasurer of Food and Commercial Workers 555. I just wanted to add that the grocery industry and the retail industry in general, if you look at the whole retail industry in the United States, it's only 5% unionized. Only 5%. So 95% of the market weight is drawing down in an environment where I grew up in this industry when it was 40-hour jobs in the 60s and the 70s, went started merging to part-time, went to a Kronos computerized scheduling system, and it's creating a just-in-time, what I call an indentured workforce. It's a workforce that they ask government then to pick up the self-sufficiency deficiencies, whether it's WIC or other government assistance. This workforce needs to have a stabilization for quality of life. If there's one issue that affects workers at the very low economic strata, it's the retail and hospitality industry. And I've been told to me, across the table from employers over many, many years, if everybody had to do something, there's not a competitive disadvantage. So we're saying lift the competitive disadvantage and the quality and bring rise, have people rise rather than everybody keep going to the lowest denominator. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just ask a question. You are in the union, right, in United Food and Commercial Workers. So have you not been able to get any agreements at all in the contracts about this issue?
We've been unsuccessful in negotiating. As I mentioned, 5% of the retail industry is unionized, so it's very difficult to leverage in bargaining these standards. It was very similar, if you recall, in the first day, earned sick day, that we received it on the third day contractually, not on the first day. So there's a lot of standards that over the last 25, 30 years, we've seen a rollback to where the private sector workforce today is only 6.7% unionized. And so it's very difficult to use that inability to leverage the marketplace to make the gains that we would like. So if you hear that, well, you know, the union's only doing this because we can't get it at the bargaining table, it's really it's a canard. They're really saying, we have 95% of the market, we're going to dominate, we're going to go to the lowest denominator, and then we're going to socialize the risk and give it to the taxpayer to pay.
But aren't all the workers at Fred Meyer in UFCW?
Most of them, yes.
Because that's one of the reasons I shop there, is because I know it is that it's surprising.
I will say that I believe Fred Meyer's is a very good employer. While we have somebody that's representing a problem, it permeates throughout the entire retail industry. It's much more difficult to get people to come and testify if they're non-union because they don't have any protections in the workplace. Right. So I think it's very brave, and I appreciate her testimony.
Indeed so. Thank you very much. I just wanted to emphasize that normally you would think of having a union helps you have more clout, and even with the clouds of UFCW.
It's still an uphill fight.
Exactly, yes. So thank you for being here, and we'll see what we can do about
Jeff,
it.
I have a low-wage contingent service worker in my household right now. And it's been interesting to have conversations with my daughter about her experience in the workplace. And one of the concerns she has is about predictable scheduling. One of her concerns is about being told after a regular shift that she needs to work a number of hours extra, and on and on. So when I hear this very compelling testimony, it resonates because, again, I have a young, contingent, low-wage service worker in my household. Question I have for you, though, is as you look to a reform agenda and perhaps the legislature weighing in on this, what's the hierarchy of concerns you have? So if you could be king for a day, would you address first predictability so that you know over the next 2 weeks what your schedule is? Would you look at this question of employers' ability to extend your workday and therefore put other things at risk? Do you have a hierarchy of things that you're concerned about?
If I had the utopia, I'd have more than 2 weeks advance knowledge because people need to have appointments for their doctors, for their kids, and it's very difficult to get short-term appointments. And so in utopia world, I would, like in Europe, they have a month, 2 months, 6 months advance knowledge in much of the retail industry. I would have a predictable pay. I would have right to rest, more hours separating, saying if you do come in within only 5 hours sleep, that you should be able to get time and a half for, let's say, within a band of 12 hours. If you're called back in 8 hours after you concluded a shift, you would get 4 hours of that as time and a half. So that's a right to rest provision. There's many things. The idea that a lot of these employers are cutting hours and yet hiring more employees, and they're keeping more people part-time, And then they used the Kronos computer schedule to maximize, if you would, the cost. They're, in essence, they're creating a higher turnover because they can see a profit in that.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you, when you look, when you survey the workforce and you think about who is it that has the most compelling claim on relief in this area of scheduling, describe that person for us. Describe the person in the workforce who is the most impacted by what you think is the worst abuse.
I think the person that's most affected is likely to be female, likely to be somebody who's of minority, likely to be minimum wage. I think they're at the very bottom. They're not always what we think is people moving up, students working while they're going to college. Many of them don't have the social economic ladders to the middle class. Many of them feel hopeless that there is a ladder or even a way. So I really think there's a profile of a worker out there that really needs to see help from government to create a minimum standard of what kind of society we want to create.
Thank you.
Well said. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Come on up, folks. Whoever would like to start, take it away.
Hi, my name is Kurt Huffman. I've met some of you before. I have a small company here in Portland called Chef Stable, where we partner with chefs and help essentially open whatever restaurant they dream of. And we've done that now 20 times here in Portland. We now have about 550 employees across all 20 of those, and I want to say that I'm enormously empathetic to the concerns that a lot of people have and are expressing here at the hearing. But I also feel like I should take the opportunity to speak for restaurants and businesses like ours that make it a priority to have business practices that are anathema to this kind of manipulative scheduling, because it's truly not a part of what I would consider the Portland independent restaurant ethos. We're businesses, and I safely, you know, I was speaking to the owner of Pock Pock, Andy Ricker, right before the meeting. We have restaurants such as Ox, St. Jack, Lardo, Grasa, Cooper's Hall. We have a whole number of them. And we're restaurants that decide not because of the bottom line, but because of philosophical beliefs that we should purchase locally, that we should purchase responsibly and sustainably. And so I think across the board, our business practices are aligned with doing things in a way that I think promotes the kind of philosophical approach to business that this kind of scheduling law would want to support or promote. That said, some of the scheduling practices that we've heard detailed in this are completely anathema to how we schedule. I met earlier this week with some of the Commissioner Novick's office, and since then have gone out to all my general managers to ask about staffing practices, and just ask them to try to detail for me over the last 2 weeks what percentage of scheduling changes were the result of us changing schedules, and what were the result of employees asking for schedule changes. 95% of schedule requests came from employees, and 5% came from us, and those 5% were exclusively as a result of weather changes and changes in cancellations by guests of reservations. So from us, ideally, we should never have a schedule change, but it's incredibly difficult to manage certain things with 2 weeks optics, such as weather, such as a cancellation of a big a client or a last second reservation. These kind of rules put an enormous amount of burden specifically on restaurants like ours, that I would feel remiss if I didn't take the opportunity to at least say there are those of us who are trying to do the right thing, And this really hits us in a soft spot. It jeopardizes our relationship with our employees because it's precisely the kind of employee who wants scheduling flexibility that works for us. The number one reason for employee-requested change of schedules is childcare, because suddenly they lose a babysitter and they need to leave. The second biggest is our health-related issues. So it seemed apt and appropriate for me to at least come and say, hey, there's those of us who work very hard at running our business the right way, and this thing, the proposal that you're considering makes it enormously difficult for us and jeopardizes the relationship we have with our existing employees. So thank you.
Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Valerie Stinson, and I'm the Director of Human Resources for the Old Spaghetti Factory Restaurants. The Old Spaghetti Factory has operated for more than 45 years, and currently we have over 100 employees in Portland, 400 in Oregon, and 3,500 nationwide. A large percentage of our employees are students, single mothers, married mothers, and other people who want and need flexibility in their schedules. That's why they've chosen to work in the restaurant business, because we can offer that to them. We already post schedules 2 to 3 weeks in advance. We ask employees about their availability so that we can work with them to determine what their schedules are. We're not just dictating them. We base it on what their needs are. We work with employees to modify their schedules when they need time off for medical reasons or school classes. But as Kurt said, there are business reasons which may require us to make changes with less than 24 hours notice. That's the biggest issue I have with the resolution. As a restaurant, our mission is to offer an exceptional dining experience to our guests. This means that our schedules are based on how many guests are expected. So we try our best to predict how many guests we will serve each shift, but guests don't always plan ahead, and sometimes they change their minds at the last minute. Imagine that it's Thursday night, and a party of 50 is scheduled. We've scheduled 3 servers, 2 bussers, and a kitchen team member to focus solely on this party. We've asked those 6 employees to come to work 15 to 30 minutes prior so that we can get prepared, and then the party doesn't show up at all. What are we supposed to do with those 6 team members? A lot of times they want to go home. They're like, oh, great, I can have the night off. In order to avoid a penalty then, are we going to be required to keep them at work? And if we keep them at work, then we're taking work away from some of the other servers that were already scheduled. If we cut them, then we're incurring more penalty costs. And those 6 team members aren't going to feel good about standing around doing very little or possibly taking tips from some of their peers because they're having to share more than they thought. I feel that it's impractical and financially burdensome to expect restaurants to incur additional payroll expenses in addition to losing sales revenue. The other thing that concerns me is that this resolution would add yet another layer of administrative requirements to the already burdensome task of coordinating the existing laws which we currently follow.
Ma'am, can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes.
Because we have the luxury of having you're I think, are going to be our last panel, and we want to get deeper into this subject, but I just want to make sure we're not operating under a misunderstanding, because there's nothing before us which mandates anything. And we are preempted from telling you what to do. And my understanding is that Commissioner Novick is essentially beginning a conversation by flagging the issue. And there is a very gentle encouragement in the one resolved, which we have no legal authority to enforce other than to simply say that as a values proposition, we encourage you to consider it. So, Commissioner Novick, I mean, I don't want to, you'll get all your time back, ma'am, but I just want to make sure that we're not missing each other in terms of what is before us. Steve?
Commissioner Fish has accurately stated what is in fact before us.
And so is what you're saying is there is no mandate about the penalty pay?
And I'm going to shut up so you can testify, but one of the things I'm going to ask you after the panel's finished is, since we're not mandating anything here, and Commissioner Novick is simply ventilating this issue, and since it's apparently something the legislature might take up, to the extent you want us to understand the unique characteristics of your industry, maybe Loyal Legion, or I think that's one of yours, right?
Yes, sir.
Tom Briggs is a friend. And, you know, Spaghetti Factory, where I think all of us have taken our kids for birthday parties at one time or another, and whatever you're here to see. I encourage you to follow up after this hearing with an email or a letter to us letting us know about the unique characteristics of your business or industry, because we need to know that. But there's not, we're not mandating anything. All Commissioner Novick is doing is framing an issue of concern.
Okay.
And in my, I don't think you were here for my introductory remarks, but I said at the beginning, outset, that if the legislature doesn't take action itself in the next session, I would be interested in asking council to consider some sort of ordinance, but be committed to a strong process that involves all stakeholders and developing a policy that, that works. So certainly you would expect to, I would expect you to participate and for us to hear what you have to say if we get to the point of developing an actual legal policy.
Okay, thank you.
Well, perhaps what we're doing is just framing our concern about a framing of a policy.
But I thought I heard a concern about a mandate. I just want to be clear, we're not.
I think we understood, yes, sir.
Okay. So anyway, that would be my biggest concern, if there is some sort of penalty pay, because many of the situations that cause us to change schedules, we have no control over, and it's a business need. And if we have to then, again, I know this isn't on the table, but just to understand, if we were then going to have to monitor, what time did we call this person to call them off, and, you know, is somebody's clock a little different than somebody else's? And I know those things sound silly, but they happen in the real world, just like with the paid sick leave. Employees, yes, unfortunately do, some of them try to take advantage of it, and there's not a lot we can do. So that's my concern, that it adds more burden and more expense. I'm totally supportive of predictive scheduling, and we do that, and we do work with our employees.
And how far in advance of a work, how much notice do they have of what their schedule is going to be? Is it next week, next?
We post them 2 to 3 weeks in advance.
Okay.
Yes.
And that's for a week's worth or 2 weeks worth?
For the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So when you post it, it would be maybe for 2 weeks. Then you post it again.
I think any responsible restaurant here in Portland has always 2 weeks of schedules up at any one time. People always know way ahead of time what's happening. So that's just part and parcel of being this. I mean, one circumstance also to remember is that in our industry here in Portland, we are not fully staffed at any of our restaurants, and we haven't been for 2 years. We have constantly a posting out, especially for kitchen labor. We simply cannot hire enough people. And so the idea of us even being in a circumstance where we can mistreat people or change people's schedules is crazy, because we can't hire enough qualified people to work in the kitchens.
So I kind of know that, actually, because what's the website? What are the websites that you post job openings at?
Poached, or we do a lot on Craigslist, or Poached. Yes, sir. Yep.
Yeah, so I was looking at Poached with a certain member of my household recently, and what struck me was the number of jobs, like front of the house and waitstaff jobs in restaurants I had heard of, that were on that website. So it occurred to me that there were a number of openings.
And I think the reason that you've never heard any kind of complaints, for instance, for minimum wage raises from independent Portland restaurants is because we're 3 to 4 years ahead of the state as far as what we're paying. We can't be paying anybody $9.75 an hour. We wouldn't have anybody working in the kitchen. I mean, we're at $13.50 an hour in our kitchens. You can't find anybody even reasonably competent or motivated below that. So the idea that we're pursuing we're 4 to 5 years ahead of what legislation is in terms of minimum wage. I mean, that those are the conditions that independent Portland restaurants have to work in.
Point. Thank you.
Valerie, I wanted to ask you a question that mm-hmm. I asked Kurt the other day. Maybe I'll get the same answer. But I've heard of some restaurants in some places that have adopted a practice of, when you make a reservation, you have to, in effect, put a down payment. So if you miss the reservation, the restaurant gets some compensation. And it seems to me that if everybody went to that system, then the restaurants would have some revenue that they could use to offer sort of a penalty pay to employees.
We don't currently do that.
Do you take reservations?
We do take reservations, yes. The Old Spaghetti Factory takes reservations, but we don't charge any kind of a penalty if they cancel.
Steve, there was an old story about Roy Cohn, one of our least favorite people, the notorious red-baiting lawyer who once had to wait an hour in a restaurant in New York, and he ended up sending one of his billing statements to the owner of the restaurant, and the owner got it, and he got a bill for $400. So he called Roy Cohn and said, "Why are you sending me this bill?" He said, "Well, that's my hourly rate. You wasted an hour of my time, so I'm expecting you to pay for me."
Interesting approach. Thank you very much. Welcome.